Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, folks, it is 8:44 p.m. Welcome to the Tennis Podcast on day 10 of the Australian Open, where we are just halfway through the day. The day session is done. The night session is still to come. That is because we have had two matches on the Rod Laver Arena, one of three sets lasting 3 hours and 8 minutes, and one of four sets lasting 3 hours and 45 minutes. They actually both felt longer than that. And those matches have hogged up a lot of time, and currently the session change is in progress, and we're expecting the night session to get underway post 9 p.m. and who knows what time we'll be coming back with part two later.
Yeah, and it could have been worse, couldn't it? Because I think in the Djokovic match, when they went an hour and 24 minutes for the first set and then 59 minutes for the second set, it could have ended up at anything, really.
Yeah, I mean, look, at a set all, I think we know that the organisers were looking at options. I don't know what was the most prominent or preferred option, but we know that at least change of plans were on the table, and they were hoping that Novak Djokovic would end up getting them out of jail, and that he did, but they were lucky tonight, relatively.
Yeah, although it remains to be seen how out of jail they are, because if Sabalenka Krejcikova goes anything over 2 hours, then Sinner and Rublev are starting at a totally unacceptable time.
Yeah, I mean, they'd be starting a best of five set match after the cut-off that the ATP are about to implement for best of three set matches.
Yeah, do come back for part two to find out exactly how in jail both the organisers of the Australian Open and the Tennis Podcast find themselves in the small hours of tomorrow morning. Coco Gauff, let's start with her. 7-6, 6-7, 6-2 over Marta Kostyuk today. An absolute bin fire of a match. Is that okay to say? I mean, I could not take my eyes off it. I'll come on to that in a minute. It was actually kind of one of my favourite varieties of tennis match, I realised today. But it was hideous, right?
Yeah, I was going to go with hot mess, bin fireworks. Look, it was, I personally found it extremely compelling as well. I know that reactions differed. Some people that I spoke to said they found it incredibly boring because the quality was just low. I found it captivating. I think some people found it funny. You know, I feel like any reaction to this match is sort of okay, you know, because it really was not your usual tennis match. Look, there were 50 combined unforced errors in the first set alone, and then it ended up over 100 across the three sets. And I actually think they're quite generous with their unforced error counting.
Yeah,
here.
Yeah, they are.
But, look, Coco Gauff had zero game today, pretty much. The forehand was a total mess. The serve really wasn't very good either. She was missing backhands. Like, you know, we can focus on the forehand, but actually all aspects of her game were just off today. But she always has her legs. She always has her champion mentality. She always has her fighting spirit. And I think those things won her this match. I can't think of another tennis player who would be not even far from their best, pretty much at their worst, and still be able to sort of keep her control on it generally and win the match. That's what I found compelling. The fact that I just knew that Coco Gauff would probably quite likely still be able to pull through this, even though she had no game. And I found that aspect pretty compelling. She is so good at winning ugly. Like, I know that's the cliche because that's Brad Gilbert's book. Like, he needs to write winning easy, and Coco Gauff will have a much easier life. But it just was the sort of incarnation of that motto today. It was a wild tennis match.
Yeah, I've been trying to think about whether I would have enjoyed it to the same extent a year ago before Coco Gauff became a major champion. Because what I so enjoyed about it today is I love watching champions struggle. I love watching them struggle against an opponent. I love watching them struggle against themselves. Maybe that makes me a terrible sadist, but I love it. I find it utterly riveting. And I think with Coco Gauff now, you have the safety net of knowing she can win a whole Grand Slam while struggling, not just a tennis match. She can have
pretty unusual
the best result of her career while struggling. And she has that mental safety net as well. That didn't mean it was a foregone conclusion today against Marta Kostyuk, but it made it less like watching a teen phenom. Oh God, can she fulfill her potential? Is that forehand gonna always hold her back? It's a safety net. You've got the safety net if she's achieved greatness. So I'm sort of allowed to enjoy this struggle.
And I think you're right that you can have any reaction to it you want, and none of them seem silly. All of them seem relevant and valid. I didn't enjoy it at all.
Interesting.
And the reason I didn't enjoy it is because I found myself almost wanting to look away every time Coco Gauff hit a forehand. I felt deeply uncomfortable watching that struggle. But I really understand what you mean, and I enjoyed watching her win the US Open. But she didn't play forehands like this in the US Open.
Yeah, I mean, this was levels worse.
She couldn't. She was struggling to find the strings of the racket on the ball. And I just can't get my head around
that. Was that because of something Marta Kostyuk was doing? Because she was... Okay, it was hot today, but she's played... You know, she's playing the same slot. She's played ESPN like her to play in the day session. Don't know. Wasn't anything particularly different about conditions. Okay, it's a quarter final, but she's played plenty of these before. What was different about today to cause this struggle?
I think one of the things she was doing that not many have done is when Gauff goes into that mode of rolling the forehand in order to protect it, she was going after it. She was then trying to pounce on it and hit it downwards. And when it worked, that was a lethal shot. She also missed quite a few of them because it's quite sort of low percentage, I suppose. And listen, she's a brilliant mover. And I think the fact that she's able to move with Gauff was significant. I thought Kostyuk played well. But goodness me, the way she was able to just target a shot. I mean, we saw an example of it with Norrie and Zverev last night, and this was way worse. This was... Coco Gauff just couldn't hit the shot in the court very often. And I was wanting to hide my eyes. It was just like a visceral reaction. I was like, oh, God, this is just so upsetting.
I watched David watching it, and I can confirm.
And I think maybe it's because I like Coco Gauff as well. I mean, I think seeing people really struggle and that was, you know, she overcame it, so I felt good about that for her.
You didn't want to finish that sentence because the conclusion of it is, I'm a bad person.
No, it's not, because I really understand what you mean. But I just think... I don't know. I suppose I just wanted to help her in some way because it looked so horrible what she was going through.
I just felt... I mean, obviously, this is easy to say after the fact, but I did just feel so confident she would come through.
Well, that's definitely something she has got that... I don't think many have got that the way she has.
I found her celebration very interesting. I wondered if there would be... a slightly sheepish celebration, a sort of, well, that's a box ticked, but I'm going to have to do a darn sight better than that if I want to win this tournament. But actually, she was just in the moment and like, oh, great, on to the next one. Mm. And did that really lovely dance on the court, and it was as if she'd won Love and Two. And I guess, again, that's because she's won a whole Grand Slam playing dirty tennis. Not universally dirty tennis. I'm not saying... I don't think any of the matches she played at the US Open were as bad as the one she played today, and some were good matches, but she's established a brand now of tennis and of, crucially, of winning, and it doesn't matter what it looks like for her.
And I think it's going to be important for her that she's got that mentality, because, you know, going into a Grand Slam semi-final with that performance as your freshest memory feels tough. You know, because, look, as well as Marta Kostyuk played today at times and has had a great tournament, she's not in the class of opponent as Aryna Sabalenka or even Barbora Krejcikova, you know, two Grand Slam champions. And I know that Sabalenka has got tight in Grand Slam semifinals herself, but if anything like the Aryna Sabalenka we've seen this tournament were to play that version of Coco Gauff, it's a blowout.
Mm.
And so Coco Gauff needs, I think, to, A, bring a better level of tennis, but also just, I think, know that she can bring a better level of tennis and just not let that performance today affect her in the next match. And if there's anyone who can do that, I think it probably is Coco Gauff with her mentality.
Just quickly on Marta Kostyuk, what does this mean? Is this a platform for her? Is this a one-off? Not one-off, because she's had good results before, but this is obviously a particular standout result. Is this a platform from which she'll springboard? Is this a total anomaly? Is it somewhere in between?
To my eye, she really has got game, and her athleticism is so impressive. And I can't believe that this is it. I think there's more to come from her. I only dipped into her press conference when it was towards the latter end, but to hear her talk, she's gone through, I mean, aside even from the war in Ukraine, which she has been so prepared to speak about in a way that blows my mind, quite honestly, she's gone through struggle in the last 5-6 years, came on the scene as a 15-year-old at this tournament. I remember being here with you, Catherine, when she made that breakthrough. And it's exciting, isn't it, when a 15-year-old just wins rounds at a Grand Slam and you weren't expecting it. And then it all went quiet, and she was saying some of the struggles she's had mentally and the difficulties she's had in life. And I just think she seems like a really impressive person who's finding ways to deal with her life, and obviously these other the devastation she feels on behalf of her country is another element altogether. But I feel like there's something in there that the game looks really good to me, and added that to her athleticism, I think you could have a heck of a player.
It shouldn't be as amazing as it was, but it was quite amazing hearing a player talk about having therapy in a tennis press conference. I mean, it blows my mind that every tennis player isn't having therapy, / every human being in the world. But I thought it was fantastic to hear her talk about that. She said she's been having therapy for the past 2 years, and obviously, as you say, David, the war in Ukraine is a massive feature of her life for the past 2 years. But I did get the impression that the therapy and the help she sought is actually kind of besides that. And I think that's quite an important point, because there doesn't need to be something specifically wrong or problematic in your life for you to seek therapy. Nobody in the history of time has ever gone, oh, it's a really bad idea me talking about that thing, it's really made things worse for me. I've had therapy, I have therapy, it's fantastic. It's not because my life is terrible, my life is great, but it's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant, and I think the stigma is lessening, but it's still there. And I think Marta Kostyuk talking about talking about it today is fantastically helpful, and it's not any indication of weakness. It's an indication of strength.
Yeah, I mean, she's 21? Mm. You know, she's lived a lot of life, I think, in those last 5 years. But I just feel like she's going to be able to build on this. And I think it being a Grand Slam as well and having significant results, that's got to do a lot for her.
I think so, yeah. And there's a lot to learn, like, from this match. I mean, she did get very tight in that first set. She really should have won it. She served for it at 5-2. She served for it at 5-4. She had a set point at 5-3. She had a set point in the tiebreak. You know, and Coco Gauff improved slightly in that stage, but it wasn't like Coco Gauff suddenly took over and started playing her absolute best. There were chances there for Kostyuk. I must say, I did feel like one of the lucky ones. My sort of take on this match might be more positive than others because I didn't have to go through that ordeal of a first set and then at 6-6 have a close-up of Marta Kostyuk's feet as she had treatment for blisters, which everyone watching on telly had to endure. And that, I just thought that was cruel after the set that we've been watching. You don't want to see tennis players' feet. I mean, you never want to see tennis players' feet.
There is too much... As a rule, there's too much close-up of tennis players' feet there in this sport. Yes, absolutely. Just in terms of who Coco Gauff is going to play in the semi-finals, obviously we'll let you know who it is later, but I can tell you 8:59 p.m. As I understand it, players are just walking out onto Rod Laver Arena. In fact, I just heard a cheer right on cue. I think,
and they've turned that around pretty quickly,
haven't they? They have, but it is still a 2 hours delayed night session.
Yeah, and there was a serious number of people in Garden Square waiting to get into Rod Laver Arena. Somewhere there's a band who may or may not be playing Dancing in the Dark right now, because we did put in a request, but
Matt and
we
I went
did
to do
to
some
leave.
Hashtag journalism to see how busy Garden Square was with all the night session crowd waiting to get in, and that, of course, before the day session crowd were unleashed onto them. So we're there, you know, checking things out, doing hashtag journalism. There's a band called... What were they? Dacey Band. Shout out to Dacey Band.
Who we now follow on Instagram.
Brother-sister duo. We got sucked into big screen action. So we're there in Garden Square. Dacey Band announced that they're taking requests. So I said, do you know any Bruce Springsteen? He said, I'll give Dancing in the Dark a go. They may or may not be doing that right now.
Good luck, Tom.
We had to leave to record part one of the podcast.
And look at this, Catherine. As you said, the players are walking out and literally there's nobody in the stadium yet, because that's the kind of turnaround that the players, that the crowd are trying to do here. It is a 15,000 exit and a 15,000 entry. That takes a little bit of time.
They've turned around quickly, but there are... Yeah, it's not without... Not without cost. So the other long match that hogged the day session, four sets for Novak Djokovic against Taylor Fritz, 7-6, 4-6, 6-2, 6-3, 3 hours, 45 minutes. What are our headline thoughts about this?
I think my headline thoughts are 0-15 on break points for Novak Djokovic, which I don't think he's ever had a stat like that before. That's my first one. My second one is how it was just a match of two parts. The part up until his preferred 7 p.m. when he looked horribly uncomfortable, and we'd spent time out in the stadium, all of us. I spent the second set of Coco Gauff's match in the stadium in the shade, not in the sun, but really not enjoying the air at all. It was thick, heavy, humid air, and you couldn't really fill your lungs with oxygen. And I thought at the time, Novak Djokovic is going to hate this, and it actually gives Fritz a chance. And they walked out at what, sort of 4:30-ish, something like that. And he had to play in the first set is an hour and 24 minutes. Djokovic wins it despite not having any break points converted at all. But he was just sort of pacing himself really deliberately the way he does, because he knew he couldn't expend unnecessary energy. Fritz wins the second set, then 7 o'clock comes, and Djokovic is a different guy.
Yeah, it's really interesting, isn't it? How, you know, it's it's a problematic shadow, but you can literally see the shadow coming across and you're like, Taylor Fritz has got that much time left before Novak Djokovic is suddenly going to be a lot more comfortable
on
this
court.
It's
like a sand timer, isn't
it? Yeah, it is.
Dribbling out.
Yeah, and I thought Djokovic was pretty impressive today, considering these are conditions he doesn't like. And I know it was sort of one set all in those conditions, wasn't it? But it was very important for him that he wasn't two sets to love down, because he knew that he could probably get it when the conditions started suiting him. Exactly as you said, David, I felt he was pretty conservative. You know, he wasn't opening his shoulders and going for his shots in those first couple of sets. He was generally playing within himself. Taylor Fritz was stepping up on the big points, like with increasing levels of brilliance. Like Djokovic, as you said, he couldn't convert any of his first 15 break points. And towards the end of that run, he was playing his best stuff and Fritz was matching it with his best stuff. Some of the down-the-line winners that he was hitting was awesome. But I never really felt like Taylor Fritz was going to win the match. And that probably tells you about both players, really. You know, it's Novak Djokovic, isn't it? He comes through these matches. And Taylor Fritz doesn't have a sort of history of... He doesn't have the muscle memory of sort of winning these sorts of matches. So it always felt like a really tough ask. And then, as you said, Djokovic, he didn't race through the last two sets, but he was a lot more in control. And overall, I thought it was pretty impressive. And I was pretty impressed with Fritz, actually, certainly for the first two and a bit sets.
Yeah, Matt and I had a bit of a debate about how well Taylor Fritz actually played, because it felt like to me he did a lot of the hard stuff incredibly well. As Matt was saying, the spectacular down the line shots off both wings, quite often on pressure points, break points down, was incredible from Taylor Fritz. But shouldn't he be playing more and winning more meat and potatoes tennis? Serve forehand, serve bang. There was so little of that. Serve, come up to the net and mop up the high ball.
It's true. Yeah, I think that's true. I still feel like he plays quite a lot of tennis within himself, and when he was kind of almost forced to go for those big backhands, it shows how good his backhand is and how explosive his forehand can be, because he was forced to redline it to stay competitive, to level up one set all, and then to be with him in the fourth set. But I know what you mean with that. It doesn't really feel like his game has moved on the way that when you think of Sinner, you feel like this real acceleration has happened and he's just separated himself from Taylor Fritz. He's left. I remember the two of them playing each other, I think, in New Wells when we were there, and Sinner won, but they didn't feel like they were miles apart at that point. I mean, Sinner has just separated himself completely, at least in my mind. And I do think that I thought Fritz competed well. He showed good stamina. He does compete well, doesn't he? And he didn't throw it in against Djokovic the way we've seen in recent times, where his attitude was bad. His attitude was good, but I do agree that he could actually get probably more out of that game. I would have thought.
It's just testament to how Djokovic is able just consistently to bend tennis to his will, and even at a set apiece and looking hot and bothered and out of sorts, I still felt like he was in total control of the match. Because so a set apiece, he's just dropped the second set. Taylor Fritz has gone off court for a lengthy break, and Novak Djokovic takes out a sachet of his newly launched health brand of... I don't know exactly what's in those sachets. Electrolyte-y type stuff.
Yes.
And pours it into a drink, you know, very, very demonstratively. You know, the packaging is on view for everyone, etc., etc. He's got it, you know, everyone's got stuff to promote. And I thought, oh my God, has his first two sets of struggle all been a big PR thing for his newly launched brand? Has this all been part of the plan? And obviously it wasn't. I'm being facetious, but it felt like it could have been, because it feels like Djokovic is so good at five-set tennis and losing sets and still being in control, that kind... If he did want to do a PR stunt like that, that would be within his powers.
There was no panic there. There was no... He wasn't concerned, was he, that it was once at all?
And guess what? If I do play a really long match, then Jannik Sinner gets to bed at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Mm. Exactly. It's just all... It could all be part of a Novak Djokovic master plan, couldn't it? A Sinner-fueled four-set victory after Berner's put on after the second set, and Jannik Sinner having a Medvedev-style 7 a.m. bedtime.
I should say, or Andrei Rublev. There is a second half to this podcast.
Yeah, which the listeners are going to be hearing in a matter of moments, so let's all be careful what we say. It is 9:09 p.m. Rod Laver Arena is filling up. And it should fill up. It should be full. I mean, they've waited long enough for this.
It feels a bit like the US Open, when, because they often have this situation, don't they? And they get their fans in incredibly quickly, and people do seem pumped.
Still not sure why we were an hour later starting today. No. We've been 12 o'clock every day. We were 1 o'clock today. If this is 8:09, it's not great, but it's obviously a lot better.
Australian news. The answer always seems to be... The news in Australia, which nobody, which you can't move. There are wildlife stories that have to be reported. That is a rule in Australia. I think there has to be a wildlife story on every news bulletin, and I'm here for it. Unless it's toads. Not here for toads, ever. That is your lot for part one, I think. We'll be back too in a matter of moments. Let's find out if Matt has to eat his words about Andrei Rublev.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life, and of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Welcome back to part two, where it is 8 minutes past two in the morning, which... feels like a massive win.
It really does.
Back all those hours ago, which for you listening was a few moments ago, we were envisaging a post-Andy Murray style situation for part two recording. And we, and I'm quite sure Tennis Australia in the Australian Open right now, feel like thank you, Aryna Sabalenka and Jannik Sinner, and your brilliance. We have collectively got away with one tonight.
Yes, I'm pretty sure that at 7 p.m. tonight, which was the time the night session was supposed to be starting, we had a minimum of seven sets still to play. That was if Novak Djokovic finished his match off in four, that was if the women's match was over in two sets, and if Sinner Rublev was over in three. And all of those things happened, like a chain of events that saved Tennis Australia from truly one of the most ludicrous finishes ever. However, I do want to say 1:21 a.m. is still an absurd time to be finishing tennis match. We have become immune to it, and we mustn't. This has been bad.
Yes, Matt!
Yeah, you're so right. We mustn't normalise this, I mean, any further than we already all have collectively. Quite right, Matt. We're going to talk about the matches in a moment. But first, I'm going to tell you about On Location, the premium hospitality
and experience provider.
On Location are our sponsors throughout the Australian Open, and we are thrilled that that is the case, genuinely. They have fantastic ticket, hospitality and travel packages available for the BNP Paribas Open in Indian Wells, Miami Open, Madrid Open, Roland Garros, Wimbledon, the US Open, and the Labour Cup, which this year is in Berlin. And we have a 10% discount code for Tennis Podcast listeners on 2024 Roland Garros official VIP ticket packages, courtesy of Steve Fergal's International Tennis Tours. Those packages include official Category 1 2024 Roland Garros tickets on Philippe Chatrier and access to La Mezzanine at L'Orangerie, which is every bit as French and fabulous as it sounds. To buy an official VIP ticket package to Roland Garros and take advantage of that 10% discount code, just go to toursfortennis.com/podcast and use the discount code CLAYSEASON at checkout. Clay, CLAYSEASON at checkout. And we also have a 5% discount code, which is applicable to all On Location tennis events besides the Olympics. That's Indian Wells, Miami, Madrid, Wimbledon, US Open, Laver Cup. And that discount code is exclusively for friends of the Tennis Podcast. So if you want to become a friend, and there are plenty of reasons to do that, then you can also access that discount code, and terms and conditions do apply. Now back to Jannik Sinner.
Yeah. He's quite good, isn't he?
How good was he tonight?
The thing is, I'm very curious to get your takes on this, because I saw it from the commentary box. It's the first time I've ever seen Jannik Sinner play Andre Rublev from that position, ground level. I had a new appreciation for those two at the end of that. Their physicality, the way they move, the way they hit the ball relentlessly. There's so hardly any defending shots. You know, there's no sort of get back into the rally, floating backhand slices, none of that. But and I felt like Rublev did exactly what he was meant to do. He went for it, and he still lost the first set 6-4. But I saw something today that I feel like is new in Jannik Sinner, because he wasn't very good in the second set for a lot of it, and he was seemed to be in some physical discomfort around his abdominal area, or something was wrong. And then he goes 5-1 down in that second set tiebreak, and he produced the sort of surge that we have celebrated on this podcast for years, from Sofia Kenin against Garbiñe Muguruza, from Naomi Osaka in certain moments, from Emma Raducanu, from loads and loads of players, the great players, the big three, all these guys. He produced a surge, and he did it a couple of times to just turn situations around and make it an efficient win.
Yeah, I completely agree. The thing is, when you've stared down three consecutive match points against Novak Djokovic in the Davis Cup semi-finals, and you've gone on to win that match, what's 5-1 down in a tiebreak to Andrei Rublev? Like, I feel like we're feeling the effects of everything that Jannik Sinner did at the back end of last season. He's a better player now. He just is. And the way he took over that tiebreak was phenomenal, because Rublev had been playing a brilliant tiebreak. I was thinking, right, okay, 3 a.m. finish, here we go, this is definitely going minimum four sets. Rublev's on it, like, this is one set all. There just seemed no way back for Sinner in that tiebreak, but the points he strung together were phenomenal, and I loved the emotion from him at the end.
Alcaraz forehand, wasn't there?
Cross court. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. It gave you similar chills.
Mm. Mm. And then there was one where you hit a big forehand in the corner and came up to the net and finished it with a high volley. Which is something
he has that Andrei Rublev doesn't, right? When you're looking at two such similar players, and I can't tell you how good Andrei Rublev's ground strokes are. To think that he's come away from this match without a set and from this tournament without having improved on his increasingly woeful Grand Slam quarterfinal record. I feel so bad for him that this is gonna, you know, on paper just be chalked up as what, an 11th?
10th.
10th, sorry. A 10th.
11th coming soon.
A 10th Grand Slam quarterfinal failure, and one, you know, this time not against Novak Djokovic or Rafael Nadal, because it does feel a bit different to me. I do think Andrei Rublev is improved. I still think he's not as good a player as Jannik Sinner. I mean, obviously. I do think this one's just a bit different for Andrei Rublev, and there are reasons to be positive, and he is just a sublime tennis player, David. I mean, the way he was hitting from the back of the court, obviously I was thrilled that we got away with a 1:23 a.m. finish, but when he was 5-1 up in that tiebreak, I was thinking, I'm prepared to add an extra hour onto my evening here because Andrei Rublev deserves to have something to show for this. And then Sinner came back and I thought, okay, well, this has its upsides too. I hope he's got some good hugs available to him, Rublev, right now.
I was heartbroken for him, really, at the end of that set, you know, and the way he sunk into his chair and gestured to his coach, I had 5-1. You just think you can feel his pain and his sorrow. But just to watch him hit a ball that close up with his legs moving like Roadrunner and his sort of racket head speed going through the ball, it looks physically impossible to do what he's doing. And then you think, and that's not even enough to get you past the quarterfinal in 10 attempts. I mean, I think I'm not quite sure where my proximity to the action influences how good I think he was. My sense was, and that's why I'm curious to see what you two both thought as people who watched that element on the TV. I felt like he went for it more than I've ever seen him go for. In the first set, he was going for some really early winners, like going for lines or quite audacious ones, as though he knew that was the only chance he got.
Yeah, I was impressed with both players, really. I watched the first set in Garden Square, actually, just to soak up some of the atmosphere. And he had a letdown, didn't he? Because he had some chances early on, and then he lost 10 points in a row and went down a break. And I thought, okay, Sinner's in real control here. And look, you just can't afford to have those sorts of letdowns, I don't think. I wouldn't say he had a letdown in the second set tiebreak, as we described. That was Sinner wrestling it from him. But just in that first set, there was a little one, but generally so impressed. I mean, I do think some of the issues in his game still remain. As improved as he is, his second serve is so predictable. And these top players, and there's a group of them now who are consistently getting to the latter stages of these big events, and he is likely to run into them. Of course, Djokovic, but Sinner is getting there now. Alcaraz is getting there. Medvedev on a hard court. And these players can take advantage, and he doesn't have the variety still. You know, his ground strokes are improved, his backhand's better, but he can't mix it up. And I just think, you know, you need a different pace if you're playing Jannik Sinner or if you're playing Novak Djokovic. And, you know, maybe given that he's improved the other areas of his game, maybe that will come and that will be something that helps get him over the line eventually. Because, I mean, honestly, he's in the territory of losing the most quarterfinals at a slam, even for people who've been to semifinals. And he hasn't even managed to do that once. It's really tough. I think his two chances probably would have been Tiafoe at the US Open and Cilic at the French Open.
That's it, isn't it? It feels to me like he needs that sort of opening.
Yeah.
But he's had a couple there.
Yeah, but I do think now he's better. I think he would take advantage maybe of one of those draws, but he probably does need it because of what I've described there about there's just this pack of players who are even better than Rublev, and that is saying something because Rublev is awesome.
You have to be improving to be standing still.
Yeah.
In tennis. That's the brutality of it. And I'm so impressed at how he's improved. He has a forehand down the line that he just didn't used to have.
Yeah.
And his backhand is much improved. I mean, it was gasp-inducing tennis. We associate Rublev with showing up and doing his thing. And it's there. But it can end up being wallpaper sometimes, and he forced me to take notice of him tonight, and that was in a straight sets defeat. So, Andre, I hope you've got hugs available, but
dogs would be good.
Dogs. Yeah, somebody showed me some pictures of their dogs tonight, and they were lovely. Jannik Sinner, is he physically 100%? How worried are we about that sort of quite mysterious abdominal injury he seemed to be clutching at midway through the match that then seemingly disappeared?
Yeah. The fact that it did seemingly disappear, and I mean, he really was showing no ill effects of it at all in the third set. He wasn't touching his stomach anymore or anything. And he didn't have a visit from a trainer. He, you know, there was nothing that really alarmed me as it went on. But at the time, I'm just thinking, oh God, here we go again. You know, we've had a few of these with Jannik Sinner, and I just was so worried for the Djokovic Sinner match because that could be one of the all timers, and I didn't sense anything. It might have been just some sort of twinge, some sort of stiffness. Who knows? But yeah, I'm encouraged by the way he finished.
And I've just had a very quick glance at his press conference transcript. He was in press at 2 a.m. No mention of it in the English portion of his press conference. He's not brought it up. He wasn't specifically asked about it. He is asked about the lateness and whether he thinks he can recover for playing Novak Djokovic. And he sounds positive. He says, I'm confident my body's going to recover in the best way possible. And yeah, it wasn't visible in that final set, was it? But, you know, it was a little alarming while he was clutching it in that second set. But 2 days off, I think, is helpful for him. And yeah, gosh, bring me full force Jannik Sinner and full force Novak Djokovic. Want to see it.
Is it going to be an all-timer?
I really think it can be. I think...
No. Is it going to be?
Yeah, I think it is going to be. Because I think that Djokovic is still hanging on to the level that has sent him ahead of everybody. But Sinner has made such strides and just looks like a completely different prospect now to a year ago. I mean, you remember when he... Jim Courier was reminding everybody about how he made his coaching changes 2 years ago and he lost to Tsitsipas in the quarterfinals or whatever it was. And I mean, this is just a totally different player. He even looks like a totally different player since Wimbledon. Even the US Open when he had all those
post-puke,
cramping problems.
David.
He's post-puke. Yeah. I think of him differently since the puke. Not because of the puke.
In the
but
bin.
I really, really do.
Imagine what Draper's going to be like.
I was really shaken by that defeat in the Wimbledon semi-final. I was really like, what is this?
It wasn't good performance.
It was not good. He didn't have a forehand.
And he was off balance all the time.
I was not predicting he would win that match, but it was bad.
Yeah.
And I thought, whoa, like, calm down, everybody. He's obviously talented, but that was so far away.
It's dispiriting.
It was, yeah. I felt really just sort of cold after that match, and Who beat him at the US? Oh, Zverev at the US Open, wasn't it?
With all the cramp and all that.
Yeah, that was a weird match in about 100% humidity. And
we were angry at Sinner at Wimbledon for not owning it as well. He was saying that he played better than he did when he pushed him to five the year before, and that just sounded like nonsense, to be honest.
Yeah, it was a really strange one, and it left me feeling in a weird place, Yannick Sinner. Then the US Open happened, and there was that sort of ordeal of a match with Alexander Zverev, I suppose, that was so condition affected, maybe difficult to learn too much from that. And then goes to Asia, does a puke in a bin, different guy.
Correct.
You've got me, Yannick.
That is how the history books will tell it.
Yeah.
We've got visual evidence.
Yeah.
So it'll be, that's one men's semi-final set. It'll be Yannick Sinner against Novak Djokovic.
If he's fit, it'll be five sets.
Okay.
I'm not saying anything to get in the way of David's hype. I'm on board David's hype.
God, we need it at Hobbs 2 in the morning, don't we?
Hell yeah.
So goddamn grateful for David walking through the front door with some hype in the bank.
I'm pumped. We've got a great few days in.
The other semi-final set up this evening, confirmed, it will be a replay of the US Open final between Coco Gauff, who we talked about earlier, and Aryna Sabalenka, who I think had her longest match of the tournament tonight against Barbora Krejcikova, an hour and 11 minutes, 6-2, 6-3. I mean, I thought Krejcikova played quite well.
Me too. It was really jarring to me how little effect her game had on Sabalenka. You know, she was trying stuff. She was hitting. She's got a beautiful backhand, hasn't she? And she was hitting lovely ground strokes. They weren't working. So then she tries to go to the net a couple of times. That didn't work. Then she tried to do lofted, loopy balls to sort of maybe discombobulate Sabalenka. That didn't work. I mean, Sabalenka got her in her own way once or twice to kind of just extend it and make it respectable. But that was an absolute drumming tonight of a really quality player. I know Krejcikova hasn't been at her best, but it wouldn't have made any difference. She is playing at an awesome level, Sabalenka.
I like to see Krejcikova trying those things and being too proud to try those things. Some of them maybe looked a little panicked, I suppose. There were a couple of net rushes that looked ill-advised. But what are you going to do? She had nothing with which to combat Aryna Sabalenka from the back of the court. And I think that would probably be true with pretty much everybody at the moment with her style of play. But of course, the Sabalenka-Gauff matchup comes with so many accoutrements to make it interesting.
Yeah, I mean, look, Sinner-Djokovic is a dream semi-final, and this is another one. And I think Coco Gauff's legs, I said it earlier, but that feels like her greatest weapon right now against Sabalenka. Someone needs to be able to extend these rallies against Sabalenka, because she is just hitting everyone else off the court. And we saw it in the US Open final. You make Sabalenka in a stressful situation have to play a few extra shots, and that's when the unforced errors can come. I don't see how Coco Gauff outplays Aryna Sabalenka, because Sabalenka's top level right now is just awesome. I mean, as you said, rendering players sort of redundant down the other end of the court. But we saw it in the US Open final. There's a way that Coco Gauff can make Sabalenka malfunction a bit and make her stressed. And this is a semi-final. And Sabalenka, you know, I know she won a couple of Grand Slam semi-finals last year, but she also lost a couple. And this is the stage now where I think we really find out about Aryna Sabalenka and how well she's playing. Like, this has been better than she's played, I'd say, at any slam so far. But she doesn't always, but six slams in a row, she's got to the semi-finals. You know, that's incredibly impressive. But it's now where that high-risk game style that she plays in the high-pressure moments, that's where we see the real test of it. And I can't wait, because I think Goff is capable of disrupting her in a way that her opponents so far haven't been. And I'm fascinated.
And I do think that is in Aryna Sabalenka's head. I mean, she was asked about Coco Gauff in press this evening. She just gave exactly the same breakdown you did. You know, she sees this matchup for what it is, and she knows that just the presence of Coco Gauff and her physicality looming at the other end of the court, even without any of the trauma and baggage of what happened in the US Open final, just her presence kind of has the ability to prevent Sabalenka from playing her game, or certainly playing it with the freedom that she has been and that has been so potent. She, you know how people step onto court against Novak Djokovic, and where usually they would aim 6 inches inside the line, suddenly they're going for the line, and you're thinking, what are you doing that? It doesn't need to be that good. And they've just got it in their head that it does have to be that good against Novak Djokovic, because otherwise it'll come back and it's just totally in your head that everything has to be 25% better than it would have to be against any other player. I think that's what's in Aryna Sabalenka's head about Coco Gauff. It has to be on the line, not inside the line. And that might be true, but I also think stepping onto the court with that mindset could be a bit dangerous for her, because obviously the best thing for her to do is just to step on and go, do what you've been doing, Aryna. Because it's unplayable. But I think Coco Gauff has a kind of kryptonite to potentially stop Aryna Sabalenka from doing what she's been doing.
I am fascinated by that prospect, because I feel like Sabalenka is playing better than she was at the US Open. Mm. And there's such security to her power. She feels like she's in total control of her game. But Gauff is the most extraordinary competitor for her age, and match player as well. Not just how much she wants to win and tries, but her problem solving and her kind of just being there and making it awkward. And obviously she's got Mr. Winning Ugly and her support team. It's fascinating, really. What a prospect.
Yeah. I mean, I would say the US Open final, like, the atmosphere was difficult, I think, for Sabalenka to think clearly, and to stay calm. Like, I'm sure there'll be a good atmosphere on, when will that be, Thursday night, and I'm sure a lot of the crowd will be pulling for Coco Gauff, but it's not going to be the pressure cooker that was the Arthur Ashe Stadium that night of the US Open final. So that might help Sabalenka to relax a little bit more. And as much as I've made the case there for Coco Gauff to make this, you know, really awkward for Sabalenka, I do think there's also a chance that Sabalenka is able to block all that out and just keeps on this sort of path of destruction that she seems to be on. Like, I do think that's possible.
Gauff is playing so badly today
that
needs to change.
It does.
It doesn't care how hard you fight and everything else.
Yeah, there is definitely a world in which we're sitting here in a couple of nights and it's been, you know, 2-2. We're like, well, of course.
Yeah. I'm not feeling Mr. Hype Man about that at the moment. I'm hopeful, but I'm not confident.
How can he be after Gauff's performance today? But I do think trauma. I think trauma is a factor.
I always think trauma.
Semi-final trauma and Gauff trauma. And Gauff needs trauma to be a factor, really, because if it just comes down to the tennis, I think Sabalenka's got her. So those matches will be on Thursday, the women's semi-finals. Both women's semi-finals will be Thursday night session back-to-back. So Goff Sabalenka will be first, and then the winners of tomorrow's remaining women's quarterfinals will be second, which is tight turnaround for the winners of tomorrow's matches. Tomorrow's matches are Linda Noskova against Diana Sremska. That is first up at midday. So we're back to the midday start tomorrow, whereas today we were at 1 p.m. We still don't know why. But we're so glad to be paying for that now. So thank you to whatever reason that was for. Noskova Yastremska, that is followed not before 1:30 by Hubert Hurkacz against Daniil Medvedev. Night session, Anna Kalinskaya against Zhang Xinwen. And then finally, Alexander Zverev against Carlos Alcaraz. Does anyone foresee any upsets? And just to be clear, on the women's front, I'm calling wins for Yastremska and for Kalinskaya upsets. That's what I count as upsets.
I think the best chance of an upset tomorrow is Hurkacz over Medvedev. But I don't expect any of them to happen. I think ultimately the favoured players will come through.
Yeah, I think so. Although I do think there's potentially a massive chance that we're underrating Kalinskaya. Mm. Like, she's been pretty seamless this tournament, and like, I know Zhang Xinwen is the player with the higher ceiling and the more buzz.
It is a low floor, though. It can be a low floor.
It can be. Like, she can
and
be
Kalinskaya is solid as a rock.
Yeah. Like, I think I would pick Zhang Xinwen, but I don't know. There's something suggesting that's not as
solid
sort of
player might
easy
be a problem.
As it seems.
Mm. Yeah, I mean,
I have no idea.
And
Noskova
Yastremska,
no idea.
Don't blame you for not going near that
one. I have
one.
Not got a clue. Not even an inkling.
And you might be playing tennis while it's happening as well.
Yeah, I'm playing at Kooyong.
In 7.5 hours. No, 8.5 hours.
8.5 hours from now.
So you're playing at Kooyong in 2024. In 2054, you'll be playing on the Rod Laver Arena.
So that's a grass court?
It is a grass court, yes.
You have to wear white?
I have to wear white. And last time I played tennis, which was, about 6-7 weeks ago now, I rolled my ankle. And that was on a surface I'm much better moving on than grass. So, thoughts and prayers.
We had a team talk earlier. We had it gave Matt a boost earlier because he wasn't sure about how his game would match up on grass. And then we remembered that Pam Shriver had compared his half volleys to Martina Navratilova. he's got a nice slice.
And I generally hit flat.
And hits flat. So we think actually he's basically Pete Sampras at this point in terms of projected success on grass. You're going to be fine, Matt. We better let you get to sleep. Before you do that, let's talk mascots. I got points today for Darwin. Well done, me. David, Francis.
Who did I go for?
You got points as well.
Did I?
I think you two had the same prediction.
No.
Was it?
I'm Andre Rublev.
Sinner in
three.
No. You had different predictions, but you both got points.
I had Sinner in three, and it's a tell you what, I'm glad when I was commentating on that blooming set that I didn't know about my prediction. I'd forgotten all about it.
I'm Andre Rublev, improving but standing still. Matt, Haider and Soma.
I'm someone who's sliding down the rankings.
Okay.
Insert player here.
Come on, we can come up with someone.
A player who's sliding down the rankings.
Who's losing a bunch? Tsitsipas, he's
losing
a bunch of points this week, isn't he? Okay, we have Billie Jean, who is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Delana Kloss. And speaking of dogs, we have Usher. Hello, Usher. We have executive producers.
Chris,
Jeff,
Greg, Jamie.
Hang on. You stole Jamie from me.
Oh, I sensed there was going to be a silence coming and I just filled it.
I didn't know anybody, so...
It's late, folks. Thank you to all of you. You are, of course, top folks. And Matt, we have shout-outs.
And we start with Matt. Matt Polin in Florida.
All right, Matt.
And Matt says, I'd like to send my shout-out as well to my partner, Greg. He introduced me to the tennis podcast and over the years has come to share my love for tennis.
Oh, Greg, you legend.
Oh, that's lovely.
That's so nice.
We like Greg's. Greg, like Greg, nice Greg, like from, nice Jack, Greg. From Exec Producers.
And Matt Roberts. So,
great.
Everyone's a winner.
Greg like Rzedzki.
Yeah.
And Matt like Ebden.
Very good.
Very good.
Thank you very much, Matt.
We've also got Sean Fitzpatrick in London.
Well, Sean.
Sean says, I met you all at the Queen's Club for the live podcast a few years ago. I was with Pat Cash. What a joy it was to meet you all. I also know the lovely Woolly.
I've just been with Pat Cash commentating. Would you believe it?
A friend of Pat and Woolly is a friend of ours. Hello, Sean.
Cheers, Sean.
Tennis Sean's. Well, it sounds like Sean Fitzpatrick might be a tennis Sean if he's mates with Pat Cash and Woolly.
Yeah.
Sean. Come on, guys.
All I can think of is the sheep that I met the other day. You know,
David, this is good. David on Kids Day wearing an offensive T-shirt. David's post with a life-size Sean the Sheep. and was frowned at by the
several people.
Craig Chiley.
David wore an offensive T-shirt on Kids Day.
Oh no!
You
were talking about trauma earlier. That's mine, I think.
Thank you, Sean.
And finally, we have Joseph Haar. We know Joseph.
We know Joseph.
All right, Joseph.
He is originally from South Dakota, but has lived in different parts of Asia over the last 13 years. Yemen, Jordan, Singapore, and currently Taiwan.
Wow. That's so cool.
My parents used to live in Yemen.
That's added 5 extra countries to our download list over the years.
Did he say Jordan? My parents lived in Jordan as well.
He's doing a Whitaker tour.
Yeah. Sudan, Zimbabwe next. Not entirely sure my parents would recommend those. Certainly not Sudan anyway, but character building. Thank you, Joseph.
Thank you, Joseph.
Do we have Tennis Joseph's? Salisbury? He won today, I think. Or he played today, anyway.
He didn't win. He was with Heather Watson.
They lost.
And he got beaten by Neil Skupski and Desiree Kravchik. So Joe's not had the best of weeks because he lost the other day in the doubles, too, with Rajiv Ram.
Didn't they lose to Mahach and Zhang Zhizhen?
I mean, obviously.
Who were winning the tournament.
Yeah.
Best player in the world.
He doesn't strike me as a doubles guy, Mahach. But I'm pleased
for
him.
He can do anything.
He can do anything.
Come on.
Okay.
Best player in the world.
Those hands. It's fine.
They're annoying me now. It's time. It's time to go to bed. It's too late. It's too late for you to be this annoying. Thank you for listening, folks. It's been a day, but it has been fun as well. We can't wait to come back and do it all again tomorrow. Tell your friends, subscribe to the newsletter, follow us on Twitter, follow us on Instagram, check out Hannah's article, her incredible piece about the now defunct Grigor Dimitrov, but it's still a definitive Grigor Dimitrov piece. And most importantly, come back for more fun and games tomorrow. We'll speak to you then.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.